Time, and I feel sorry about that. I wish we had a little bit more time here. And then we are also going to be competing with session, and I am quite concerned that we will not have enough time to do our business. So we're going to, every time we have an opportunity to have a full committee, we're just going to get our business done. Good afternoon. I am absolutely delighted to be here. And I want to welcome committee members and people in the audience today and to the future meetings of the Committee of Education. It's just really a great honor for me to be in this chair. I am delighted to be here today doing this and doing it with you. I have met with most of you so far, and I am just so impressed with the level of knowledge and passion that you bring to this committee, and I am just looking forward to the next few days and to really accomplish what we need to accomplish in this committee. I would like to wait a few minutes until we have more members coming in to start in introductions so that we use this time to get to know each other a little bit more. I presume that you have met with most of the members in this committee in another committee and just kind of get a sense of members' background and what they're bringing to this special business of creating policy. So let's go ahead and start now. I think we have most of the members here. I would like to ask members to introduce themselves, to go around and introduce yourselves. I don't think we have our vice chair here yet, but we have our minority lead with us, and I'm delighted that Senator Nelson has been assigned to work with us in the lead capacity. We've worked together in the past, and so I'm looking forward to the future. And we're going to start introductions, and I would like to ask that you let us know the district that you represent, but in a very brief way, to let us know what will be the issue that you would like to move forward, that you would like to have an impact on, and that if you had the entire power to resolve it, you will resolve it in education. So,
are you sure you want to know that, Madam Chair?
I do.
All right.
I think that we have an amazing opportunity here, and in the Senate we have 4 years, so we should be able to get somewhere in those areas. So, Senator, if you could start.
Oh, thank you, Senator Torres Ray, and thank you for those good words. I think there are a lot of great things we can do this year and in the next several sessions for children in Minnesota and making sure that we have strong education for our kids. My name's Carla Nelson. I live in Rochester. I also represent the areas of Chatfield, Dover, Eota, and Stuartville, and 14 townships in Rochester. So my district is very diverse. It has an urban school district. It also has some of our smallest school districts in the state. My background is in education. I've been a special education teacher, a Title I teacher, and a reading specialist. I've taught learning disabilities, and in all those areas from about first graders through ninth graders. So my one wish, Madam Chair and committee, would be that at the end of the day, we would know that every one of our students in Minnesota is achieving at their full potential and that they are prepared to succeed in life. And I think it's more specifically than that, because that's rather broad. That's like wishing for world peace. I think we all share that. But more specifically, I do think that while that's a tall order, I think there are new tools in the tool basket of our schools that can help with that, and that's one of the things that I look forward to working on in this committee, and that is a continuing with our digital learning bill that we passed last year, and looking at the report that will be coming back to this committee in regards to that, and looking at what further things can we do in Minnesota to make sure all kids are able to access digital learning that will allow them to achieve to their full potential.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chuck Wigger. I'm from Maplewood. This is my 17th year in the Senate. My district also includes North St. Paul, Oakdale, White Bear Lake, parts of, shared with Senator Chamberlain, Matamidi, Birchwood, Willerney. I have this as my top goal. That would be to strengthen, stabilize, and simplify school funding so that we can maximize opportunities for all students to learn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dave Thompson. I live in Lakeville, and my district includes Lakeville, Farmington, and then many small towns and township areas down in southern Dakota County all the way to the Northfield border. And the issue that I'm most interested in is expanding school choice and the opportunities for parents to help get their students into effective schools if they are currently not in a succeeding school.
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Carlson, and I represent the area of District 51 in Eagan and Burnsville. My school districts are 191, which is Burnsville and Savage, 196, which is Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan, and 197, which is West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Eagan. And I'm an engineer, and I've had incredible education that befell me. And what I see as I retired from 3M, and what I see as I went around the world in my job was the investment that other countries were making in their young people. And I think that this is really defensive in our case, that we need to make sure that our workforce is as educated as the best in the world. And that will, that's necessary. It's absolutely necessary for us to not only just survive in the world, but also to prosper and keep our quality of life that we've become used to in the United States. And what that means is educating every child to their potential. We have no excuses for not doing that. And this means that we take advantage of every possible opportunity that comes our way. So that's my magic wand. And world peace is right after that.
Should I have to follow that? Well, good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Carrie Rood, and I represent the new Senate District 10. Senate District 10 is all of Crow Wing County and all of Aiken County, right, the heartland of Minnesota. I formerly served in 2002 to 2006 from Senate District 4. It was a much larger district. But still the heart of Minnesota. I am new to the Education Committee. I have never served. I have served on higher ed, but I've never served on an Education Committee before. But I believe that my focus normally is on jobs and economic development, but that speaks to education directly in the heart of that. The Brainerd Lakes area has the highest unemployment in the state of Minnesota. And we need to change that, and the way we change that is we have a good educated workforce. We have a program in Brainerd called the Bridges Program, and our business community and our manufacturing community is working with our college and our schools to make sure that the children coming out of our schools know the good jobs that we have available, because it's the trained workforce that will fill those jobs. We have a manufacturing plant that just added 62,000 square feet, and they need good, qualified folks to take those jobs. And so my focus will be to make sure that the education matches the jobs that we have available so that we don't bleed our workforce to North Dakota and South Dakota.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Melissa Franzen, I represent District 49, which is Edina, West Bloomington, Northeast Eden Prairie, and Southeast Minnetonka. And as you all know, we are very proud of our schools and our district and the different districts that we represent in Senate District 49. My background is I'm an attorney, and I also have a master's in public policy, so I'm educated, and my parents believe that, and really focused on giving me the best education possible. So I think that's a core value for me personally, and something that I would love to work on in the committee as we move forward is on closing our achievement gap, and we have to do that tomorrow, but to do that tomorrow, we have to start today. So I'm looking forward to working with all of you on making sure that we tackle that issue in Minnesota and be a model for the country possibly as well. Early childhood is something that I also would love to be a part of, and making sure we have the policies in place to support a robust and accountable and efficient early education programs in our schools and for our state. For the same point that Senator Rood mentioned, we have to make sure that our workforce is educated, and I believe the investment in education early on is where we want to focus on. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Susan Kent, and I represent District 53, which is Woodbury, Landfall, and the southern parts of Maplewood and Oakdale. And the school districts that includes is South Washington County, North St. Paul, Oakdale, Maplewood, and Stillwater Schools. I'm very excited to be here. Everybody else, a deep commitment to education through my family experience, my life, and as has been said, all our children deserve that opportunity. That is why, for me, one of my biggest passions is in the early childhood, kindergarten, early years area, because I believe it's the right thing to do to provide those opportunities for our children. But I also believe it's the smart thing to do, because when we don't get everybody off on a good start, it's very complicated and expensive to try to go back and correct missed opportunities. Thank you.
Madam Chair, very glad to be here. My name is Melissa Halverson-Wickland, and I'm from the new Senate District, Senate District 50. And it includes the rest of Bloomington that Melissa Franson's district does not include, and then a large portion of Richfield. And my background is being on the school board, and I guess one of my big wishes that would be great to work on here in the Senate is trying to find ways to allocate the right resources and define the right policies that we're really accelerating the growth of those who aren't doing as well in our school systems now, and trying to close the achievement gap. I think we need to make sure that everybody is achieving, but we somehow need to find a way to accelerate growth for those who are not doing as well. And early childhood education is certainly, I think, one way to help do that. So I'm very glad to be here.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Greg Clausen, and I represent District 57, which is Apple Valley, Rosemont, the city of Coates, and then there are two precincts in Northeast Lakeville. The school districts that are in those areas are the Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan Public Schools, District 196, the Farmington Schools, 192, and I have about four blocks of the Burnsville Public Schools, District 191. My background is in education. I'm a former classroom teacher, assistant principal, and I was 14 years high school principal. Also worked in our district office as a grant writer and administrator of federal and state grants. All of my experience has been in suburban school districts, and rather than focusing on one goal, I have several, providing opportunities for teachers and students to reach their full potential. All-day kindergarten is a high item on my list, looking at the achievement gap and tackling that issue. Unfunded mandates, I think that puts a real strain on our school districts. Looking for a predictable, sustainable funding mechanism for her schools is very important. And also looking at how we can have more opportunities for our high school students to earn college credit while in high school. I was on the board at the University of Minnesota College and the Schools program, and I'd like to see programs like that, as well as AP International Baccalaureate programs expanded. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm Roger Chamberlain, District 38. It's straight north of the Capitol, up Wright Street, about 20 miles. Salina Lakes, White Bear Lake, White Bear Township, Hugo, North Oaks, and Lexington, Circle Pines, and parts of Blaine. I had the great opportunity of serving on this committee in the last 2 years, and it's good to see all the new faces. In all cases, we have to do what's, this sounds cliche, but it's true, what's best for kids.
Will we improve their lives? And we have to look for outcomes. And to that end, there's two things I think we need to do. One is choice, charter schools, strengthening charter schools, making sure they stay strong, and improving choice overall. We have some great examples of great charter schools making great strides with at-risk kids. Harvest Prep and Best Academy in Minneapolis. I think there's also a Hiawatha Academy charter school in southern Minneapolis. They do great work. They take at-risk kids, and they beat Minneapolis all the time. And Minneapolis, I recently learned, has turned to them for some best practices and ways to improve the outcomes for their students as well. I also agree with my colleague to my right. I'm sorry, Senator
Clausen.
But going to get used to some new names and faces. But empowering schools and parents, and that goes along with mandates, there's just too much. There's 600 pages that our schools have to deal with. But those would be my two things.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Senator Alice Johnson. I represent District 37 in Anoka County. I live in Spring Lake Park and represent most of the city of Blaine and part of Coon Rapids and part of Spring Lake Park. My school districts are Anoka-Hennepin School District, Spring Lake Park, and a small part of Centennial. And my concerns go back to the early education area, where I think we have the most potential to reach all of our goals, and that is to close the achievement gap, to get a higher graduation rate, and to prepare a workforce that we will need in the future. And it's pretty clear that the return on investment is really great. So I'm happy to hear all the people that are choosing that as their focus, and I think we'll get something done that way. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I'm Kevin Dahl, Senate District 20, which includes Northfield, Dundas, New Prague, Belle Plaine, Le Sueur, Le Centre, Montgomery, Lonsdale. I think I covered everyone there. I've been a teacher for 29 years, still teach. We'll go back this fall into the classroom, teach civics, driver's ed, AP government, and social psychology. I've been a wrestling coach for over 20 years as well. And I was pretty excited to hear the Education Finance Committee today. The budget reforms that were put forward by the task force this last November, and I'm excited about implementing many of those reforms to give teachers and schools the resources they need to make sure that we are finding success in our public schools. And you know, there's a lot of great ideas out there in many of these school districts in terms of closing the achievement gap and innovation and so forth. And I'd like to maybe I think we've talked about perhaps best practices, and are any of those that we could expand statewide. I think instead of reinventing the wheel, I think there's a lot of good things happening in our schools. We'd like to see some of those maybe implemented on a larger basis.
Thank you, members. I also would like to give an opportunity to the staff. I know many of you already know the staff because we will be working on the Education Finance Committee together, but some of you don't, so please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Bjorn Arneson. I serve on the Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis staff, a research analyst there. And as the chair mentioned, I also assist on the Education Finance Committee. So glad to help the work of this committee in any way that I can.
And Madam Chair and members, I'm Anne Marie Butler. I'm the Senate Counsel. It's my 18th session. I've always worked on the E-12 or K-12 committees since I began here, and willing to help you with any drafting, amendments, that kind of legal research that you need.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Blanca Martinez-Gavina, and I will be the committee legislative assistant, and I'll be taking the notes.
In the back, please, go ahead.
My name is Raymond Harris. I work for Senate Majority Leader Ed Cook. I'm with the Southern Republican Caucus Research. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jay Williams. I work as a fiscal analyst in Senate Council for the Conservative Fiscal Analysis.
Thank you. Members, just briefly, I think it is important that you know that our office will be available to you. Our staff is available to you to research any ideas, any concepts that you would like to bring before this committee, to set up meetings outside of this this committee to really explore those ideas and figure out how do you put together efforts that you want to bring to this committee. If you want to bring a bill or simply have a hearing as an informational hearing, I am open to do that. Senator Wigger said in his committee that we are going to be really doing partnering to do the work with finance, and I am really delighted to announce that we definitely want to work together with the Finance Committee as well as the Higher Education Committee, and many of you serve in those committees. So I want to make absolutely sure that you know that and that you help us figure out, you know, how ideas connect. I am in the three committees, so hopefully I will be able to track those ideas. But if something comes across that, you know, we are not really paying attention to, I want you to make sure that I want to make sure that you do bring this to our attention. We also, our page, yes, I'm sorry. I was looking at this side and I didn't look. Please introduce yourself, Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm the Senate page for this committee.
Thank you so much, Mike. Apologies. Also, with respect to the logistics, I want to make sure that really my priority is to open the space and to open the podium to people who actually interact with three groups: students, teachers, and parents. So groups that do direct work with those individuals will have a priority in our hearings. Those who do not, they will not have a priority, but they will be given space to talk, of course. And the reason I say this is because many times we have individuals who want to give us an opinion. They will be given an opportunity, of course, because we need to hear and we need to learn from everyone. But sometimes we get people who have a lot of expertise, who are working in our districts, have made an effort to travel all the way here, and they do not get the opportunity to speak on behalf of the kids, on behalf of their staff, on behalf of parents. So we're going to give, we're going to make every effort to give priority to those individuals. We are also going to make an effort to get you connected with the staff to do research and to invite the University of Minnesota, to invite higher education institutions to help you with research. We're going to connect with the NCSL, with the National Council and state legislators and others who do extensive research in education to help us conceptualize ideas. So we feel very strongly that we have a lot of talented people in our state who are working with this, with our kids, and we want to use those resources. We also want to make sure that I want to make sure that I bring to you some of the concerns that committee members have. As I said at the beginning, I have met with most of you, and you have been expressing a very strong desire and have told me that you would like to focus on priorities, and that priorities are kind of issues that we've talked about for a number of years. Achievement gap is a big priority for many of you. You want to review testing, and you want to get work done in that area. You also want to continue the conversation about evaluation and how do we treat our teachers, how do we provide opportunities to really talk about how we value their work and how we conduct evaluation of both teachers and kids. Those issues came up time and time again during our interviews. And then finally, the issue of how do we prepare our kids early on, early childhood education came up again and again. And this initiative that the governor and the commissioner have been talking about in terms of how do we enhance our high school experience and how do we connect our high school experience to post-secondary opportunities for kids. A lot of people are talking about it, and people are enthusiastic about, you know, what is that we can do to do a better job of preparing our kids to be successful. Those are issues that we will be reviewing in depth, and we will be devoting most of our time. There will be proposals that come from all of you individually that will be exciting, and we will definitely hear those proposals. I am contemplating the idea of forming committees on the main issues so that we have more time devoted to really reviewing the research on the different aspects and the work that the commissioner, the department, and other stakeholders have done. As I said at the beginning, one of the struggles that I have and I fought to change, but I did not prevail, is the timing of these of our meeting. We're meeting during lunch and right after session. So when we have long sessions, I don't know what are we going to do. It is possible that we're going to be meeting in the evening. So I am going to do whatever I can to start on time and use our time in the most efficient way so that we get to hear your bills and that we get to address these core issues and that we put committees in place to really have extensive reviews of some of the issues that will require more time. If you have an interest in an issue that you think it needs to be part of a committee, if you have any ideas, please feel free to bring that to my attention. Are there any questions from members that you would like to ask before you start? Before we start our presentations? Thank you. So, for today and for the next perhaps a couple of hearings in our committee, we're going to provide an overview of issues that you really need to know about so that all of us are in the same page. We need to know about kind of the jurisdiction of this committee. We need to know about the structures that are out there available to us, very specifically the Department of Education, the staff that is available to you to really provide information. Clearly, anything that you propose, they are going to be responsible for implementing. So we need to talk to the commissioner and her staff and try to figure out how would this idea, this concept that you want to propose, will actually work. I think it's to our advantage to know, you know, who does what in this department so that they can help us move forward. We also need to know about really what is our jurisdiction, where do you find the language that defines our responsibility and the responsibility of the different structures that exist to provide education for our kids. And then we are going to start reviewing the different reports that were requested by the legislature to address some significant issues during the last 2 years. It was very important work was done to really put our hands into very complex concepts that we need to review and figure out where do we go from here. So we really appreciate the work that has been done, and we want to move forward and make sure that we provide, you know, some ideas for implementation. So I think I'm turning to you for the review of the jurisdiction.
So, Madam Chair, members, there are, I think, two pages in your packets. The first one to look at is the one entitled Education Committee. It's actually something you can find online on the Senate's committee information page, but that is actually detailing or sketching out, I should say, maybe not detailing, the jurisdiction of the committee. And there's one for, you know, obviously every committee in the Senate. So the committee's jurisdiction is over all bills relating to education, children, and libraries, but does exclude higher ed and child care. So then through that, the committee has then somewhat oversight or whatever of the certain state agencies, and they're listed there as the Department of Education, then the Faribault Academies, the Minnesota State Academies Board, actually, and then the Purpose Center for Arts Education Board, the Board of School Administrators, and the Board of Teaching. Then there's other entities as well that have some statutory authority. There's the Education Commission of the State, which is ECS. Their web is ecs.org. They also publish a lot of reports. They do a lot of you know, what states are doing, and all various topics, you know, relating to education. There's also the Interagency Coordinating Council, which actually tries to work on coordinating services for children with disabilities. Then there's still a statutory reference to the Minnesota Academic Excellence Foundation, which in the past was referred to as MAEF, and actually used to receive state funding, but now that's a privately funded entity. And there's also the Minnesota Commission on National and Community Service, which does the Serve Minnesota program and the AmeriCorps, and then the High School League, and then the Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission, which used to be the the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. But now there's legislative members. They also work with the Department of Natural Resources, which actually manages the Permanent School Trust lands. And then there's also service cooperatives. And then in the occasion of needing to do confirmations, this committee is responsible for confirming the Commissioner of Education, the board members for the State Academies Board, the board members for the Purpose Center, as well as the School Administrators Board and the Board of Teaching. And then other laws that kind of come under our jurisdiction, which aren't necessarily in the education code, are the Child Abuse Victim Services. There's a statute that requires reporting in the maltreatment of minors. If there are bond requests that relate to Children's Museum, I guess probably the money stuff would go to the Finance Committee, but the Children's Museum usually would come before an Education Committee. Then another one to note, public libraries, and those are actually in Chapter 134 and 134A. They're not within the Education Code, but library issues or public library issues do come before Education Committees. And then the other handout that you got I'm responsible for is this printout of the statutes table of chapters. This is the table of chapters for the Education Code. So the majority of bills that amend the statutes come through there. And I thought I'd provide a few highlights because the titles aren't necessarily telling you everything that's in there. But and I'm not going to tell you everything that's in there either. But just to kind of get an idea of where you might be working on legislation and changing the current law. In Chapter 124D is education programs, and actually contains a lot of stuff. That includes what we title enrollment alternatives, which is a lot of the choice issues that people mentioned. That's charter schools, there's online learning, there's post-secondary enrollment options, there's flexible learning year programs. That also includes within that chapter community education, which under that is early childhood and family education and school readiness. There's also adult basic education, education for English language learners, and American Indian education programs. And then in Chapter 122A, which is titled Teachers and Other Educators, that's where you find the information about teacher licensure, other employment and contract terms, and then that also includes the evaluations that members mentioned, and as well as requirements for staff development. Then Chapter 120B, which is titled Curriculum and Assessment, some of it's kind of obvious. There's but the academic standards are there. The actually the requirements for graduation are there, and as well as I'm going back to the with the standards is also the process for or the timeline for the commissioner or the education department to modify the standards under there or the requirements under the standards. And then also, obviously, the state testing, all the assessments and curriculum requirements are there. Then moving up, kind of up to Chapter 120A, which is the school calendars, which is the compulsory attendance, that's where you find requirements like school start dates and the requirements for how many days of school. Then moving again to 121A, that's the student rights, responsibilities, and behavior. That includes school safety and violence, discrimination policies, also student health, and dismissal from school. So the People Fair Dismissal Act is there, and as well as how discipline issues with students.
And then finally, I'll highlight then Chapter 125A, and that's special education. And that also, in addition to what you think of special education in the traditional schools, or that also includes the academies and what happens that those two entities. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Butler. Any questions for Ms. Butler? I do encourage you to take a look at this. I know you don't have a lot of time to be reviewing our books, and we all have copies of our books in our offices, and now and then we review them. But it's hard to find the time to really review those statutes that govern the work that we do in our committees. But one issue that came up during the meetings that I had with the different members was that, you know, some members felt that we had an opportunity to really review obsolete policies that are in place and that we really need to be more proactive in identifying those policies and try to figure out, you know, are they relevant? What do we need to do to, you know, perhaps delete some of those policies that are no longer relevant or update? So I will be asking for your support in that regard, you know, trying to figure out if you could spend some time helping us. No questions. I am telling you, we're going to have to do a lot of work to do this during lunchtime and get you excited about this committee and the presentations. I think we have the staff from the department ready. The commissioner is here. Commissioner, thank you so much for taking the time to come today and to help us learn about the work that you do and how we can do this work together. clearly, the responsibilities are huge, and I've talked to your staff, Commissioner, to help us kind of focus the presentation on the areas that are kind of most compelling, that are urgent, issues that we need to review right away, issues that you feel are important to this committee during the next 1-2 years, so that we begin to really connect with your staff and with you to figure out how to get this work done. So welcome to the committee, and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Madam Chair, and new committee members who were here last year. Some of you know me, and some of you are new to learning about myself and this commissioner role. What I'd like to do today, Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, is give a quick overview, but leave a lot of time for questions. I was very interested to hear, as you went around, talking about your priorities and what you wanted to get done this session. They align quite well, I think, with the governor's priorities over the past 2 years, and so I'm hoping that we'll be able to find a lot of common ground this session and get a lot of work done, especially interested in your comments that you just made about cleaning up some of those statutes and some of what Senator Claussen was talking about as a former teacher and school principal and superintendent, and some of those mandates, unfunded mandates as well, and different ways that we can look at moving forward in a way that gives schools more autonomy to work directly on student needs and improvement and continuous improvement. So thank you so much for having me. I have members of my staff here today that I'd like to introduce before I get started, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Jessie Montano, who is deputy commissioner. She's not with us today because she's working at the agency, but you'll be seeing her. Charlene Briner, who is my chief of staff, who is here, and she worked in the House prior to this appointment. Kevin McHenry and Darren Cordy, who you'll be seeing quite a bit, and you've probably already talked with both of them. They were also with me last year as we worked through the session, and they're just two very strong policy, I call them wonks, who know a lot about education and worked with Senator Stump before coming on our team. So they're here as well. Rose Hermanson is here, who is an assistant commissioner. She has led up all our task forces, so she'll be available also today to take questions. I'll be briefly sharing with you what we've been doing around community engagement, engaging real Minnesotans in the work of education reform. And she's been leading those task forces as we've gone around the state to get input. We also have Rose Chu, who is assistant commissioner, and she is working with the career technical ed, academic standards areas. And then we have Karen Cadigan, director of early learning. We have a new office of early learning that the governor established in 2011, and we can update you on that. I heard a lot of interest in early learning and our Race to the Top initiatives and what we've been doing around preparing all students so that they have a great start. And then Stephanie Graff is here, who may be able to answer some of your more in-depth technical questions on the waiver that Minnesota got in our accountability system. So I've brought my team with today to answer any questions. I'd like to do a quick overview of where we've kind of been the past 2 years, what we see as the work moving forward, and where we've had our priorities and how I think they match up nicely with what I heard as that you went around the table and did introductions for your priorities. That's okay, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Absolutely. Commissioner, I have been told that you need to say your name for the record.
Okay.
If you could, please.
Dr. Brenda Caselius, Commissioner of Education.
Thank you, Commissioner. Please go ahead.
So the Minnesota Department of Education is structured to address all of the policy issues that you just went through with the statutes. We are the executive arm of the Minnesota government that looks at P20, or actually P12, education policy and administration of that policy and the funding systems. And so within that is the academic standards. We have the Office of Early Learning, compliance and monitoring around special ed and compliance and monitoring of all policies that are issued by this governance body, school support, assessment, agency finance, school finance, student support is a little different than school support. Student support more about the climate and culture of schools. Information technology, safety, health, and nutrition, special education services, state library services, education licensing. This is not the Board of Teaching. It's separate from us. But educator licensing, communications, and government relations. The Minnesota Department of Education serves 338 school districts. We have 148 public charter schools. We have 1,968 public schools. We have about 52,000 teachers. We have about 825,000 K-12 public school students. And 488 non-public schools. That's about 75,000 students in non-public. About 15,000 students are homeschooled, and we have approximately 48,000 students in our charter schools. So this past 2 years, we've really placed a strong emphasis on looking at what our core work should be over the next 4 years of the governor's term. And we changed our mission at the agency to really try to reflect what it was that we felt was at our fingertips for issuing an excellent education to Minnesotans, and so our youngest Minnesotans. And that is leading for educational excellence and equity every day for everyone. And I heard a lot of conversation around the table as people were introducing themselves that this also is on your mind, that every single Minnesota student has what they need to be successful. And that requires that we have an excellent system and one that is also addressing equity of opportunity for every single child. And the word leading is important here, and we spent a lot of time thinking about that because we don't want to be an agency that just is compliance and monitoring. We want to be an agency that compiles best practices from across the state, because we know we have a lot of great teachers out there doing really great work. It's just they don't get to tell their stories, and so we want to find those stories, find where the great work is, and then be able to share that across the state, across hallways, and across schools and districts. And we think we can help lead that effort. So the governor issued in about February of 2011 the seven-point plan, and these were really his priorities given within a $5 billion deficit. We knew we couldn't do everything, but we knew we wanted to focus on what worked, what in research could help teachers teach and help students learn. And so we tried to find those policies and funding supports to focus our work around so that we could be really efficient with the taxpayers' dollar and very responsible with the taxpayers' dollar. And so we knew that we had to focus on resources. If additional money was possible to do that, and in the first year of the 2011 session, we were able to invest $132 million in education, even though we knew that we were in a $5 billion deficit. And the governor's been committed to resourcing schools based on what they need. And so really looking at the funding structures, and I think you had an opportunity to hear in the Senate Finance this morning, some of you may have been there to hear about some of the task force work, and we'll get to that in just a minute. And then I heard a lot of you talking about the importance of every kid having a great start. And that's absolutely critical, that every student has the opportunity to come to kindergarten ready to learn. And so we feel as though we need a strong focus on preschool. Raise the bar, close the gap. I heard this as well. We want to ensure that every single student is excelling. But knowing that in Minnesota, we have some of the greatest disparities among our students and how they achieve in the nation. And I know that that's not acceptable to any of us sitting around this table today. And so we want to be sure that we pay attention to that as well, while we still pay attention to making sure every student excels. Reading well by third grade, we did extensive work in our third grade literacy bill, also with funding incentive dollars to ensuring that students are reading well by third grade. There's a lot of research that supports that if students read well, they persist, they graduate, and they do well in life. We also believe strongly about supporting teachers, and I heard this comment from several of you about supporting teachers as well as students. Teachers create the conditions for students to be successful, and they have to have the tools and resources to be able to do their jobs effectively. And so I believe that by supporting teachers, we're able to actually get resources closest to the classroom. And then they don't have to take so many resources out of their own pockets to do this work with kids every day. Better testing for better results. I heard you speak to this, Madam Chair, and this is an area that we're working on. And it's really important that we know what it is we want to get and in terms of the outcomes for kids and what results we're looking for. But just as important is how we measure that, and that those measures are reliable and valid, and they give teachers the information they need so that they can teach better. And so what we've tried to do over the past 2 years is find ways to test better, but we also have some recommendations, I believe, that we'll be bringing forward around assessment in general and our new accountability system and how we think we can strengthen that. And I already mentioned a department that really provides more educational leadership by really reaching out and talking to great teachers, as well as getting steeped in the research and disseminating that across the entire state. I'm going to speak just briefly on the different task forces that we have, because I know several of you will have many opportunities to go in depth. But some of our goals with this task force was to be able to focus on supporting students and results, still getting strong results and holding our schools accountable for the dollars that they get and they spend every day on our kids. Allowing decisions to be made closest to delivery. There's a strong value of local control in this state. And they school districts have to be able to have the autonomy in order to be able to innovate and find new solutions, because doing the same thing is going to just get us the same results. And we want teachers to be able to feel as though they can create and innovate. Meet the state's commitments of adequacy, uniformity, and making sure that those resources go out equitably, providing greater flexibility in how funds are used, being more transparent to our public, making sure that there's funding formulas are simple enough for people to understand so then they can make good decisions around them, that they're structurally sound and stable, but nimble enough around emerging needs. We know, for instance, technology is an emerging need, and it can be quite expensive for school districts. And they need to be able to flex their dollars enough to be able to say, I need to put money here because this is what we need in our community to meet the specific needs of our kids. And so we want to make sure that that any emerging needs that are coming out and that the funding is sustainable. That we have the working group website. All of our documents are there. We've received a National Governors Association grant this past year to do some really deep work in looking at special education funding, as well as looking at funding systems that other states were using. And so there's some very good comparison data on that website and information for you to look at, as well as I'm sure our team would be willing to present to you as well, and how policy impacts those funding decisions. Early childhood education. The governor has shown tremendous leadership in early childhood education by establishing the new Office of Early Learning. Dr. Cadigan is leading that. With it, also the Children's Cabinet, Dr. Ed Ellinger, Lucinda Jessen, and myself meet regularly around Children's Cabinet issues, and our agencies have formed a mini-cabinet of our deputies and Dr. Cadigan, who get together, and they work across agencies on a multitude of issues. And this is really something that the governor has pushed all commissioners to do, and that is to be smarter about government and provide better government to the Minnesota people. And we think if our agencies are working more effectively together, and we'll just make better decisions. We were able to secure the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant. That was $45 million. We prioritized four communities in that Race to the Top grant, and that's going very well, and we're very excited about that opportunity to institute quality in our early childhood systems, as well as provide scholarships. And the legislature also provided scholarships in addition to the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge grant. And so we're very excited about that opportunity in early childhood education. We had a task force that looked at integration revenue. As you know, this topic came up, and you know, there was pretty bipartisan support that these dollars could be better spent. And so there was a task force that convened to provide recommendations around how the dollars are spent, how they should be held accountable, and what the uses should be in terms of showing annual progress, and what best practices should be shared around integrated schools, as well as closing of the achievement gap. So these are the dollars that are specifically narrowed for closing of the achievement gap and creating integrated schools. The teacher evaluation work group is currently meeting. They've been meeting for the past year to develop a format model, a default model around the teacher evaluation that includes all of the things that were required within the statute. As many of you know, we require 35% of student outcomes to be accounted for in the new teacher evaluation, and we also require that students are surveyed and parents, and that there's observations that are done by a trained observer. And so those are all included within our teacher evaluation model. We'll be getting about 20 pilots in the 2013-14 school year. Before that work was done, we were able to also pass principal evaluation. Every good school has a great principal and great teachers. And so we felt that if we were going to be doing teachers, we also needed to address principal evaluation. And so all principals will have their evaluations beginning 2013-14. So we already are piloting those currently and looking at that. That is not a requirement that they go to the state's default model like it is for teachers, but every district must have an evaluation tool that they use with principals. Assessment accountability work group, looking at the assessment recommendations. Many of you know we have an urgent crisis on our hands around the grad exam for our 14-15 seniors. Students who are current sophomores in our schools will be denied diplomas if they do not pass that math grad component. So what we want to be able to do is really look at how do we have our assessment systems mirror what's required in post-secondary. So we've been working with Chancellor Rosenstone, and his staff has attended all of these task force meetings to look at some recommendations. The assessment task force has recommended eliminating the grad. They've also recommended that we look at it, replacing that with a college-ready assessment, similar to the ACT or some other SAT or some other type of assessment that would determine college readiness, and also give enough diagnostic information that we could do interventions earlier with students in remedial education in high school rather than waiting to do that where it's very costly in post-secondary. So we just presented to the House on some of that planning and thinking around that work and would be happy to do so here as well. At this time, they also recommended for the 3-8 that there's a yearly assessment that would measure growth for students year 3-8 and provide timely and accurate information on how well students are doing to teachers so that they could help use that in their planning for students grades 3-7. The NCO waiver is something that I'm extremely proud of. I think this has changed the conversation in our schools. I believe we've got accountability right. I think that we've been able to now give every single school an achievement gap measure. We've never been able to do that before, so they know where they are. It's called the focus rating. And it looks at how well are their students of color growing compared to how their counterpart students are growing in the state, which is a much harder measure to meet. It also looks at graduation rates and the subgroups of graduation rates. Before, we looked at overall rates for all students in your school. Now we're looking at those subgroups of students by school. And I think that makes a huge difference in the accountability system in that we want to ensure every kid crosses that finish line. And without looking at that and having that be part of your accountability, it's easy to overlook that in an overall kind of count in accountability. So we're using multiple measures to look at. We're looking at growth. We're looking at proficiency. We're looking at graduation rates. And we think that this provides a better window into how schools are doing. We have three categories of schools that we use, and these are, of course, just the schools that receive title funding who have these consequences or designations or categories. The first is priority schools. That's the lowest 5% of schools that score on our multiple measures. The second group of students are the focus schools. Those are the 10% of schools across the state that contribute to the achievement gap, the largest in the state. And the third category of schools are called priority or are called reward schools. We've never looked at schools that are actually having exceptional results, and this is the first time that we have looked at exceptional results, and we go in and learn from those schools and those reward schools. And today we announced celebration schools. Those are a small group of schools, and we do this as a department. It's not required by the federal government to recognize those schools that make yearly growth, just so that they know they're on the right path and they're doing really good work. And I think that that small recognition helps to incent them and to get them to understand that to stay the course, keep at it, because it's, you're just a year or two away from achieving your goals. And so we're really excited about those celebration schools as well.
Commissioner, so, if I may, I'd like to give you a little bit of time to have a little break. And maybe stop here before we move into the next part of your presentation that talks about, you know, how you're doing and how we're doing as a state.
Sure.
This might be a good time for us to stop and perhaps ask some questions and then move into the second part of your presentation. Members, I am incredibly appreciative of the department and the commissioner and the staff. They put this together very quickly to be able to come here and give us a really a brief overview of the different issues that they have been asked to staff and convene. And this is just a very brief summary of these reports. We intend to dive into these reports in depth and bring you a full copy of the reports and perhaps dedicate another hearing to the reports in order of preference. So however, you know, the committee wants to kind of look into these reports, we will be doing more reviews. But I think this is a good time for us kind of to stop and really give the members an opportunity to ask questions. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for the good overview. And I have a comment and then a question.
Sure.
The first comment has to do with something near and dear to all of us, which are those early literacy advances that we saw. And I'm thinking most folks might know at the table here, but maybe not everyone in the audience, the good news that as we received our December budget update, the budget update in general said revenues were up, expenses were down, and we had this third consecutive surplus. And we were all excited about that. But there was one area where actually expenses were up, and it was a good area, and it was the early literacy. So we had more students actually reading on grade level than we had even projected. So I think that's just something to celebrate.
It is.
But then my question has to do with the math. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about the elimination of the math grad standard. We know how important STEM is, certainly for our graduates, and that those are the areas, that those are the jobs sets that are growing in our economy. And I would like to know a couple things. One is was the issue that the grad test was inappropriate? In other words, was it that the test measured things that we did not expect students to know or they did not need to know? Or it's very worrisome if we're eliminating the test because there's numbers of students who can't pass it. And I know there were many in my community who were very concerned about that. So I'd like you to kind of address that. And as you do, talk about then kind of that timeline between eliminating that grad standard test, that math test, and when are we going to, you know, we don't want to have a gap there between, we know how important that realignment is to our post-secondary institutions. I just want to make sure that there's not a gap there. Could you address that, please?
I can. Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, this is a really complex issue, so we've given a high overview, and I think that it will take several committees probably to go in and dive into all of the assessment research that we've gotten. Couple of high points. One is you may have recently seen the TIMSS study that shows that Minnesota actually scores top in the world for our math. We have strong, strong math standards. We did not join the Math Common Core. And teachers seem to really like the math standards, and we have a strong math exam for that called the MCA. There's a portion of the MCA called the grad that goes and is embedded in the math test, which makes the math test much longer. We think that students might be getting some test fatigue as they take this longer test. And so the grad is embedded within that MCA. I think that the recommendations from the committee around the assessment and the grad is that you get good measures on accountability on the school systems, and that's what we're looking for, is the accountability on the school systems. And they're looking to replace it with something that is aligned to college ready. We had two studies, one by Christopher Moore in Minneapolis and one by David Heistad in Bloomington, who are who have presented to these committees over the years their research as research and assessment directors of both Minneapolis and St. Paul, and Christopher Moore worked at the department, actually. And what they found was that 25% of the students who did not pass the grad had an acceptable ACT score and would have been accepted into college with an acceptable ACT score. So we're worried about the misalignment and that we're not measuring the right things, and so we wanted to take a deep dive in that. And so we had researchers and experts who were presenting at that committee and talking and debating about those recommendations.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Yes,
Senator
please.
Nelson,
thank you for the explanation. Certainly we're concerned about the 75% as well.
Yes.
Who didn't. But I did have a question. I did read that about the 25% who had an acceptable ACT score. One piece I wondered, was that an acceptable ACT math score?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome back, Commissioner. Good
you,
to see
Senator.
You again.
Good to see you as well.
Hey, on the Education Finance Task Force, I've read through parts of, but I'm happy to see here, provide greater flexibility in how funds are used, preserve local control. Can you, obviously that's a problem with the local schools. There's over 600 pages of this stuff, and several of them, they get funds locked into different, dollars locked into different areas, and they can't move those dollars around, so they have to spend money on things they don't necessarily need or want. So could you give me an idea what they're talking about there? I mean, it doesn't have to be detailed. I'm just interested in the idea, what they might have.
Well, I think, Madam Chair, Senator, I think what we're trying to do is to give local control and local authority to get the dollars closest to the classroom based on the students that are in that community and in that school. And oftentimes, they'll get dollars that are categorized for one piece, and then they'll have to spend that on that one piece. And the public doesn't understand that those dollars can't be spent on, say, reducing class size or instituting a new reading curriculum or buying iPads, and they want to do these things. But the law says specifically that you can't spend it on these expenditures. And so what we wanted to do was simplify the law, provide more autonomy and authority to the local school district and the local boards to be able to make those decisions, because we think they know their students best and they'll know what solutions that they need to spend those dollars on. And our system has become so cumbersome with so many categoricals that it's really hard to budget adequately. And so that was the thinking behind that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, Senator Johnson?
I'd like to go back, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I'd like to go back to the assessment and ask you a question. If you've about the ACT tests, my everything is kind of anecdotal oftentimes here. My daughter and her family live in the Mounds View School District.
Yes,
and she brought me a postcard that said the Mounds View Foundation, Education Foundation, raised money so that all of the juniors in their school could take the ACT test, no matter what. And she said she thinks it's showing that, first of all, it identifies students who maybe couldn't take the test and are qualified. It identifies them, give their families confidence about sending their child to college. Also, it would, in fact, be an assessment. And I'm wondering if you have any knowledge of that or if you have some thoughts on it.
Senator, Madam Chair, I am really proud of Irondale High School and the innovation that they've taken. They actually just received an award from the Humphrey Institute last night for...
Is that right?
They did. And so we're really, really proud of them, and they just presented it to the House Policy Committee. And so what they do, and there's several schools, high schools, that have chosen to do this, is to give the ACT to all their students because it removes the barrier of fee. Mm-hmm. And so some families can't afford the fee, so that removes that barrier. It also sets the expectation that you are college-bound and that you can do this test. And so everybody has the same expectation. And then also it's given at the school. And sometimes there are transportation barriers or other barriers for students in order to go to a regional testing center, for instance. And so they don't go there. And I think Irondale also does some ACT prep in the afternoons and such. And so it's this holistic approach. And the state does have a commitment to ACT Explore test in 8th grade, and they commit to doing the plan test in 10th grade. And Minnesota has some of the top ACT scores in the nation. I think we're number one or number two. But we don't have all of our kids taking it. It is optional. I think that students could benefit from taking this exam.
And Madam Chair and Commissioner and members, not just the fee, but also I remember when some of my grandchildren are there now taking the test, and it's like it's on this Saturday at this school.
That's
and
right.
This time, and if you aren't available at that time or you don't have transportation at that time, you may not get
That's
there.
Right.
I don't know. I'm happy to hear that they got an award and that you're aware of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? Thank you, Commissioner. A couple of things before you move into the next part of your presentation. The House has their committee hearings on Thursday mornings. I know that clearly our intent is to work together because these reports are the same. We have to review them, educate our members, figure out what the members would like to do, how are we going to move forward with implementation. So Representative Mariani and I have been talking about how do we do this so that we don't have to repeat the presentation. And we try very hard, but it's going to be impossible to have hearings for both houses because our members obviously have other committees in the morning, and then his members have committees in the afternoon. So what we're going to try to do, since they are in the morning and we're in the afternoon, mm-hmm. we're going to try to time our agendas so that you come prepare and you block your Thursdays for us.
Okay.
And then your staff, will not have... It's just so difficult since we have so much material that we're going to have to review. Mm-hmm. We're going to do our best to let you know. We're not going to be able to do this all the time, but to the extent that we can... we're going to try to time our presentation so that you do it in the House and then you come here okay. and do it in the Senate, and that way we will all have the same information. The other issue, Commissioner, that and members, that people have been really talking about is reviewing best practices and reviewing models that work.
Mm-hmm.
We are very interested in that. There are things that are working in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about problems and deficits, but our districts are becoming very creative. Mm-hmm. They are using their own resources to do that, and the states should be supporting that. So we need to hear. Every time you have an opportunity to really name those specific districts and members, your districts, please let us know.
Yeah.
We need to know. We need to visit those programs, and we need to bring that material to the committee immediately so that we begin to think about ideas of taking that to scale and doing the work here in the state.
Excellent.
Thank you, Commissioner. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, we have, I believe, 78 celebration schools as well as 128 reward schools, and that means they're getting their kids not only at proficiency, but they're also seeing tremendous growth and closure and achievement gaps. And so we can certainly get to that list of schools. And then the celebration schools, they had to apply to for celebration status. So they told us what innovations they were doing at their schools and what best practices that they had. And so we have all of that information. So we'd be glad to have some of them come and speak to the committee and share some of their great work.
Thank you, Commissioner. As a matter of fact, I will be having a hearing on that. So I'm going to be, I have some notes from the different committee members. I'm going to be asking other members outside of this committee to give us those ideas. We're going to be doing a brief assessment. I have an intern who will be connecting with all the senators and with you to really bring that picture here because we don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are some things that are working, and we don't need to go too far to find those models and figure out, you know, what is it they are doing that works. So I really would appreciate, since you have connection to all of them, it will certainly be helpful to have your input into that process.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And any way that we can be helpful, my staff is available to be helpful in any way to help with pointing out research or best practices or in the scheduling. I appreciate accounting for our time and preparing, but we will bend however we have to. This is really important work, and so we're anxious to work with your committee to get some of these things done for our kids.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to end with a few slides on the results, and these are very brief. We have a full data center that is on our website. We're actually already revamping that so that we can make sure that it's accessible on all platforms like iPads and that. But we wanted to get the data up for families and for teachers to be able to use that right away in their planning and within their professional learning communities. So we've seen some closure, if you can see this graph. I know that you can't read the small print, but you can see how there's been some slight closure in the achievement gaps here. This is looking at all grades within reading. But we see on our NAEP scores, that's the National Assessment of Educational Progress, that reading really has stayed pretty much the same over the past 10 years. And so we're hoping these new reading initiatives that we've been doing the past 2 years and this strong focus on early literacy is going to help us really accelerate learning for children, especially within reading. However, I want to highlight to the committee that this year will be the first year that we are assessing the English Language Arts Common Core. And those reading passages that students will have to take are much tougher because they are actually college and career aligned. So we anticipate that our reading scores, hopefully they'll be good, and we won't see a bump down. But even with our math, we saw a bump down and we saw a bump back up again when we had the new test. But it will be a new test this next spring. So I just want to make everyone aware of that. Our graduation rates, as I shared, we have about a 76.9% graduation rate overall. And again, that places us at 27th in the nation. And we have some of the largest achievement gaps for graduation rates for our kids of color and our poor kids, which is unacceptable. However, I have some good news. Over the past year, which is not reported here, but over the past year, we've seen increases in our graduation rates overall. We saw a 1.4% increase, and we saw an increase in African American graduation rates, about 2%. Hispanic graduation rate, we saw our Asian rate go up. So in all subgroups except American Indian subgroups went down. We saw tremendous growth in mathematics and reading among American Indian students, but we haven't yet seen that in graduation rate. That is a concern of ours, and we want to be sure that we address that. We've been working with our Tribal Nations Education Committee, as well as we hired a new director of Indian education at the department who was the former commissioner of education with the White Earth Band. And so we're very excited about working with our tribal nations communities and also within our public schools to accelerate the achievement of American Indian kids as well as all kids.
Commissioner, just for a moment, I am incredibly interested in this issue. I'm having a meeting tomorrow at the Humphrey Institute to talk about how you collect data and how kind of ethnicity is incorporated into, the numbers. Particularly, I think there's a large group of people, they came to my office to talk about kind of the black category.
Yes.
That incorporates no immigrant children, which, you know, is a large volume of kids into kind of the African-American category, and they're just very different kids. Actually, people from Rochester are interested in that, Minneapolis, yes. St. Paul. And they really want us to do something about it because they want to know what is happening with their kids. I'm interested also in this category of the American Indian in terms of understanding kind of regions, Because I think it's the best way to begin to figure out, you know, what are some of the issues that we need to address with those regions, with those specific populations. Anything happening in that respect with the department right now, or this will be a new conversation?
Madam Chair, I've talked to our Chief Information Officer a few months ago, and he is working on looking at how we disaggregate the data down to home language, and I actually had a meeting with him just a few days ago as well, so that we can pull out those very specific subgroups. What we need to be careful about is our FERPA laws, our data privacy laws, when the number gets to be too small in one school or one district. And so we're trying to work around those data privacy laws so that students can't be identified and their data shared publicly, because these are public websites. In the interim, what we've done is I've had my chief information officer speak with the research and data folks at Minneapolis Public Schools, looking at how can we do an interim fix until we have the bigger fix, where we have larger numbers of new to country or English language learners or new immigrant status or migrant status folks. One other piece of that is a lot of that is self-reported, and so we also want to be very careful around our data when it's self-reported data and the assumptions we might make from that data and the decisions that we make around policy. And so that's just one caveat as we try to work through getting them the information they need to be very specific around the strategies that they're using and where they're putting their resources, as well as their instructional programming, without compromising data privacy.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad that you're working on it. I think we need to sit down to talk about, you know, how we can get our hands around that information. Go ahead.
And I believe I just have one more slide, and that's the third grade reading data that Senator Nelson was talking about. And how, you know, it's very promising what we're seeing in reading and some of the growth and the closure of achievement gaps that we're seeing in reading. And so I just wanted to share that with you. And so reading is up, math is up, graduation rates are up, and we think that we have a strong platform and plan moving forward in terms of our really focused agenda. On ensuring every kid comes with a great start, every kid can read at third grade, which the research shows is a number one predictor, that we have the right assessments so that we know and can be sure that we're giving the right information to teachers so that they can plan better around their instruction for individual students and personalize, and then aligning our systems better with higher ed and holding schools accountable better and smarter ways. And so and then working with the federal government, you know, I'm one of 50 chiefs, and we're still waiting for the Elementary Secondary Education Act to be reauthorized. And until that time, we're still trying to push the limit with the United States Department of Education, ensuring that they give us the flexibility we need in order to meet every single child's needs here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Weir.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I had a few quick questions, and it'll be difficult to give a quick response, but at least I was wondering. First, the subject of safe schools.
Yes.
Overall reaction as to what we can do to make them safer.
Senator Weger, Madam Chair, you know, Minnesota has safe schools. I think overall, you can't ever predict the incidence of a madman or some kind of crisis that might happen. Those do happen, and we've seen them happen in Minnesota. But the safest place for kids is in a school, typically. Most schools are locked and have one entrance. All of the superintendents now, since the Newtown tragedy, have been reviewing all of their safety plans with their staff, trying to figure out ways that they can strengthen that and different solutions for strengthening their security measures, whether that's bulletproof glass or additional security at the door during coming and going times, teachers locking their classroom doors, all of those different things that they put in place, practicing their evacuation plans, which they have to do 5 times a year. So Minnesota is well prepared. Are there things we can do better? I think yes. I think there are some of our rural districts that have facility needs that that need to still be addressed for their security. They don't have the right kind of surveillance cameras, for instance, or their doors don't have buzzers in. Those are things that are some that cost money to do, and some of our districts haven't been able to pass bonding or other operating referendum to be able to free up those dollars for them to do that. This is especially true in the rural area. I think other things are security, police resource officers, and having accessibility to them. I've been working with Commissioner Dolman and in communication with her around some of the work that they had in the safety school safety center that was federally funded. And so kind of thinking about those ideas. And then, of course, you know, just safe and welcoming schools around culture and climate. We have a division in our department that helps schools around positive behavior intervention supports to give students that kind of support around discipline and character building and those kinds of things in schools. And within our bully recommendations, and I don't think we have the bully task force listed here, but that's one of the task forces that we did. In our bully task force, they recommended a school climate center to help districts through finding prevention plans for school bullying, also to ensure that there's PBIS systems, positive behavior systems in place, and that there's good intervention systems and data systems for them to be able to know where this is happening and to what severity so that they can intervene. So we're supposed to get that information from the result, you know, from the recommendations at the department.
Madam Chair, thank you, Commissioner. It might be helpful if there was interagency discussion, which I'm sure is happening, but perhaps there could be some initiatives that we weigh as we prioritize, and of course, mental health and early identification, intervention, and other suggestions as well. So, would look forward to that at a future hearing, as appropriate. And I had just two other quick questions.
Senator Wheeler.
Better testing grad rule requirements. When will we have recommendations packaged together? I see what you have for grad, but for testing and putting this all together, when will we have something specific in bill form?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Wheeler, as soon as you want it, we can get that to you because the assessment task force has met and they've come forward with their recommendations. And so, you know, our focus right now has been on the governor's budget and getting the governor's budget ready for next week. And right after that, I think we'll be ready to hit the ground running.
Thank you. Senator Wheeler.
Yes, and that would be helpful you know, to have that. There are budget implications. Tests aren't free. And we'll look at that. And also, you know, we mentioned ACT and Accuplacer. Didn't mention that, but that is another college readiness or instrument that's used. And how this all interfaces with higher ed and the whole system. You get it, and we'll look forward to that. Yep. And finally, on the evaluations for teachers and principals, will there be specific recommendations for us to consider, at least from your evaluation groups?
Senator Wheeler, Madam Chair, we have recommendations from the teacher and principal evaluation groups that have been meeting, and they have put together the model framework, which was the word I was looking for before. And so they're out piloting the principal evaluation now with volunteers, and the teacher evaluation will be piloted next year, school year. And so that work is ongoing, but we have a draft model already finished that was mostly funded from foundation dollars. As you know, we put in teacher evaluation but did not fund it at all, which could provide a pretty large local impact to our school districts if they follow through with all that's required within the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Wheeler, for those questions. And Commissioner, Senator Wheeler asked, you know, the two questions that I think these members have been asking, and we definitely, I want to make absolutely sure, members, that 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 you know you have an open invitation to send me your questions and ideas. There are existing regulations as well as, you know, the recommendations that are coming from the report, the proposals that and ideas that will be coming from your office, different groups that have an opinion. We need to be able to compile this information and make sense out of the presentation that you will be bringing in and your recommendations so that these members really have an opportunity to provide meaningful input.
Right.
I really want to work with you on that. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that you have the members' ideas and requests ahead of time so that when we carve out time in this committee to have that hearing, we address their concerns. They will be here to ask the questions,
right.
But sometimes it's hard to come up with a question right away or to ask you to be prepared to respond with a question to a question if we don't prepare ahead of time. So on those particular issues, which is, you know, existing process for evaluating teachers and doing all of the work to transition into a new model and testing, we are going to devote a lot of time. I think those are going to be core issues during this session, and we want to do as much as we can to complete that work. So just to let you know, Commissioner, that I intend to work with you and with the members, of course, to make good use out of our time. I think I had another member wanted to ask a question.
I had just one brief question.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, when are we going to see the digital learning report that's supposed to come back to the Education Committee? I just don't recall the timeline on that. It had to do with the development of the catalog of online resources that met tied to our standards.
Okay.
And then how to go about assessing those standards for student growth. In other words, which of the resources, how did those resources, those online resources, how did they tie to student growth? And I think that was probably the bigger report that was coming back, but also one on the online catalog.
Senator Nelson, Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
We are going to have that. Kevin's telling me in the next couple weeks it's getting corrected for accessibility. So we put everything up on our website when we create public documents, and so it's getting now looked at for accessibility. So it should be available within the next couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. So, and I'm going to rely on you, Senator Nelson, to keep us on track to get that report.
Yes.
We have so many reports that we have to review,
a
so
lot.
Please keep us on track in terms of schedules and things that we really need to hear. And as I said, time would be of essence, so we really need to do that. Any other questions, members? Commissioner, thank you so much. Thank you for your presentation. Again, we will be calling you back to review this in depth, and we will develop a schedule so that you will know what are some of the questions the members have. And for now, if the members don't have any more questions, we are getting ready to adjourn.
Madam Chair, can I say one thing?
Yes, Commissioner.
First, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thanks, everybody, for your service on this committee. I think it's the most important committee, but, of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the Education Chair. You have two additional documents. One is the Governor's 7-Point Plan, and on the back are some of the highlights of the work that we've done over the past 2 years and accomplishments, as well as the 7-Point Plan. In specific, you'll see little check marks. We consider that we've made good progress on those that are checked and still have yet to do those that are unchecked. And then just a reminder that all of the documents and all the task forces that we've conducted over the past 2 years and the stakeholder engagement and who was on those committees can be seen on our website at state.mn.us, education.state.mn.us. And if any of you need to speak with me or have an appointment with me, you can contact Charlene Briner or Kevin McHenry or contact me directly.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Commissioner.
So much.
And just for the members, we are trying to make sure that when we have the in-depth presentations about these reports, we're going to bring the chairs of those committees and the people who provided input, not just the staff that was assigned to work on those committees, because obviously we want to hear the perspectives of all the people that were appointed to work in these areas who have a lot of expertise in those different topics. So I'm trying to coordinate and, you know, figure out the schedule, but they will be available to you, members, so that you can ask those questions directly to the experts. Thank you, and we are adjourning for now.
Good meeting you, sir.